Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the toy department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, it's time for another toy department. Back after a slight hiatus.
An unplanned hiatus caused by my negligence. Yeah, apologies.
I feel like this is hiatus season for me because there are many obstacles in terms of me coming into work. I've worked from home quite a bit in the month of January here.
Which is pretty crazy for a radio station.
Yeah. Although, you know, technology has enabled me to do a lot of things. There are very few things now about this job that I can't do in my house, which is kind of wild.
That's cool, I guess.
But, we're kind of in between bouts of snowstorms here right now. So,
and awful, frigid, freezing temperatures.
Bitter, bitter cold. Now, you missed last week because you were back in the Midwest, right?
Not at all. I was in the southeast. Okay. Charlotte and Florida, so I was comfortable.
Oh, so you were comfortable. Yeah, I know you've lived it before, but...
Oh, I'm not interested in it. You don't have to tell me about it. I don't want any part of it.
It's rough. All right, we are doing this podcast with a special guest today. My dog is here, but your dog is always here, right?
Your dog's in every podcast. Yeah, he's not in the room today. He's downstairs mucking about, doing God knows what.
Don't you worry when the dog is like doing
he's
whatever.
He's 13.
Oh yeah.
I mean, we know each other pretty well at this point. Might he lick himself until he hurts himself? Maybe. Probably not. But in terms of like
getting into trouble, it's not happening.
Puking or crapping on something, we're pretty good. Yeah. We're pretty good on that.
This one's real good with the not puking and crapping on stuff. So
is it more destruction?
No, she's just, I don't know. I probably just worry for no reason.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's just part of being a dog owner. You're like a six-month dog owner. When you're when you're counting your dog ownership in decades, you'll take a more laissez-faire approach.
It's probably true. Okay, let's get into pop culture because we had a couple weeks off, so we have a ton of stuff
so
to catch up on.
Much to do.
I'm going to apologize now if you did something for a homework assignment that we didn't cover because we got a lot of stuff, and maybe we'll get to it somewhere down the road.
Yeah, the biggest one is Black Earth Rising, which I suppose we could try to do for next week.
Yeah, I think we should. I mean, look, I've already watched three of them, I guess. So,
okay.
So I don't mind talking about them, although now I'm getting further and further away. but yeah, I suggest you check that out. We'll have some other stuff when we get to homework too. But I wanted to start with, to me, the show that has captured the television cognoscenti, if you will.
Ooh, because I don't know what this is. I don't know what's captured the eye, but I know what I liked the most this week.
Well, that would be Netflix's Russian Doll.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, but I kind of sound like it from your that you were also all in on this.
Oh,
show.
I'm so in. I've watched half of it, four of the eight, but only because I've been busy. This was a whole family thing on vacation. I didn't have as much time to watch TV as I would hope. First of all, like this is the starring vehicle Natasha Lyonne has always deserved, and all she had to do was reach independent success and write it for herself. She is so, I don't even know how to describe it. She has this like impish charm.
Yeah.
That's like undeniable. She's just so delightful as she like bungles about doing alternately horrible and ridiculous things. She's just this utterly endearing character. And beyond that, the conceit of this show is so clever and funny, and she handles it so funny. I mean, you know, obviously we've all seen Groundhog Day, but this is just different enough. and funny enough in its own weird way. Like, it's just, I think it's brilliant. And again, I've watched half, but there's a sort of twist and turn in the third and fourth episodes. How far in are you?
Oh, I've watched the whole thing.
Yeah. Okay, so without spoiling the end, I'm going to spoil the halfway point right now.
Yeah, this is going to be it's now going to be difficult for me to talk about this with you,
really?
because I don't know. It's going to be hard for me to determine which things happened in the first four episodes versus, you know.
I'm going to do my best to lay that out right now.
So
because so spoiler alert coming. Obviously, I spoiled the Groundhog Day element. So
yeah, and I would say, you know, if you're looking for a principal difference between this and Groundhog Day, it's not really a day that you know she's kind of living. It's more of a life that restarts at the same point. If that
well,
makes sense.
Well, what it feels like to me at this point, and this is going to start to get spoilery for the first half of the show, 4 out of 8. What it feels like to me is there is a path, there is an intended path, and she is trying to find it, making a variety of decisions, and when she either fails or just gets unlucky, she dies and starts over.
Yeah, I mean...
And I don't know that there's a path, but I know that has, her approach from the beginning has been to figure out what the hell is going on. Why, when she suddenly dies tragically, does she pop again up in the bathroom at her birthday party? And in episode 3, she discovers there is another guy who is also having a similar experience, dying repeatedly. And that's when you kind of get his perspective for a little bit. And then they meet. And one of the funny things is they have had, up to this point, a totally different approach. His is, all right, he's obsessive compulsive. So he's like, I enjoy this routine. And even though this is sort of a horrible day, I'm going to like live it out until I get it perfectly. I'm going to keep practicing. Whereas she's like, all right, on to the next clue. Each time she wakes up again, she's like, all right, I got to get to the next thing.
Right.
And so she actually tracks him down. And then you get to a point where, you know, they're going to be working together at the end of episode 4, essentially. And actually, you know, what you really see at the very end of episode 4, again, spoiling, is he's walking out of his apartment, but things have changed slightly. So they're like, his fish is no longer there. And the wedding ring he was going to give the fiance that's been cheating, or the girlfriend that's been cheating on him, is gone. So something is happening here. I don't know what yet. Obviously, you do. But like, that's on top of the characters being delightful and the writing, I think, being really kind of brilliantly funny. It's got this sort of interesting mystery at the heart of it. And I just could not be more enthralled.
Yeah, I mean, look, the writing is really crisp and sharp. It's nothing. God, there's really not. It's weird because, you know, I know people who watched it and didn't love it and were like, well, what, you know, how much can you do with the Groundhog Day premise? And to me,
a lot.
It's so much more than that. And I had those worries in the beginning. In fact, the first two episodes, I would
yes,
say.
Yes, because before the other guy comes in, you're like, all right, but where is this going?
Yeah, like, what? Yeah, this seems really confining. And
yes.
And sort of what you realize over the course of it is that it isn't necessarily confining. So in a way, living this day over and over again and having these things that you sort of – that the characters now know, understand, and expect will sort of happen, in a way gives them some freedom, right, to kind of play with that, you know, and see, well, okay, you know, whatever. I know I'm going to be back here tomorrow, so it doesn't really matter what I do today, right? There's and that's the thing about this show that I think is really interesting, and I think I can say this without giving out too much, is that it becomes sort of this Rorschach kind of test of what you see in it, like what what these repeating loops are a metaphor for. You know what I mean? And it can be a metaphor for just living in New York or addiction or death or all kinds of things. I mean, you know, in a way, this show fits nicely in with The Good Place and Forever, right? Yeah. Like, they're kind of these sort of meditations on the afterlife and, you know, what your real life means in the context of that and in, you know, what you do and what matters and, you know, what's important in terms of where we're going. And I, and meanwhile, I would say all three of these shows, I mean, you liked Forever less, obviously, than I did, but
correct,
they all have a funny spin on that. You know what I mean? An interesting spin on that. And this show is as funny as any of them. Captures New York, you know, I'm not sure what neighborhood that is, honestly, because I'm not, you know, a New York alight. But, you know, that kind of, I would say, village Manhattan style of living that is very specific to that situation. And it's just so charming. And the direction of it is really brilliant. There's so many details. And when you think about, like, this thing is a loop, right? You're kind of living the same day over and over again, but subtle things are changing. Like, just the amount of, like, effort and continuity that went into all of this stuff and how much of it was thought out and understanding everything that, like, it's this beautiful puzzle. And I just it's a really singular television experience to me. And I would say it's also one of those shows that really is almost kind of designed to be binged. You know what I mean?
Yes.
I'm sure you kind of took it in two chunks, which I think is probably normal because not everyone can just sit down and watch TV for, you know, 4 or 5 hours at a time. But it is sort of it does sort of help to swallow this thing in segments, you know, because it's much easier to see the evolution. Like, I can't imagine, I don't know that I could have dealt with that show if it came on once a week. You know what I mean?
Yeah, perhaps. It certainly, it would have been a little harder to break in, I think. But, yeah, I just loved it. I just, and again, Natasha Lyonne is so funny and just kind of wonderful. Her career, I don't know, I guess it hasn't been so bad, but I feel like it should have been even better.
It's a very interesting career. And, and I would say, I mean, I would definitely consider her, like, if you brought up Natasha Lyonne to me before this, I'd be like, yeah, she's a lady that does a thing. And you've seen her thing and you know her thing. And I like that thing, but it's just kind of the thing that she does in everything. And it's not that she's not that person, you know what I mean? In this, like,
right,
she's still
kind of
doing her,
pretty,
but, like,
there's depth to it.
There's so much depth to it. And it's really an impressive performance. And you know, you haven't got there yet, but I thought her direction in the finale is really something.
Well, so, I can't wait.
Yeah. You got a good thing ahead of you. This is, I would say, highest recommendation from both of us on Russian Bell. I want to talk about let's talk about High Flying Bird while we're kind of in the Netflix world.
Okay. Can do.
High Flying Bird is the new movie from Steven Soderbergh. About an agent and a high level draft pick, I would say, who is about to start his career, NBA career, but they're in the midst of a lockout.
Yeah, I have to say that was one thing I was confused about, because at one point I thought they said the number one draft pick.
Yeah, I kind of thought that too, actually.
But then they were talking about him being a bench player, so I wasn't sure what to make of that.
Well, you know, I mean, you've just described Markel Fultz, right?
Yeah, but then the other guy was also a rookie, but playing ahead of him? It didn't...
Yeah, that part I didn't fully understand. So
I'm just saying.
Yeah. It's weird because Soderbergh knows basketball and I think has an eye for detail.
Yes.
Typically. So that was weird that one part of it did seem a little bit fuzzy to me.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of that part. I will say this. I had an interesting experience with this movie that I don't... It's an experience that I occasionally have and kind of delights me, but I'm not sure it's the most ringing endorsement, although I do mean it positively. And that is... I wasn't really all the way in until the last, like, 5 or 10 minutes.
Really?
It's not that I wasn't enjoying it, but throughout a lot of it, I was kind of like, maybe that's an example. Maybe it's the last 20 or 25. But I don't know. I don't know what exactly I was waiting for either, but for whatever reason, I watching a lot of it, I was like, okay, this is cool and it surrounds basketball, which of course I like, but like, to what end is all of this happening? And then it just sort of came together in the end in a way that wasn't maybe any more complex than the first two thirds, but I don't know, just really fit for me and sort of tied it all together, and I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's a movie that is about basketball, set in the world of basketball, and has almost entirely no basketball in it.
Right.
Which I think was sort of by design.
Clearly,
yeah. Yeah, you know what I mean? I don't think that was exactly an accident. But it does sort of give an interesting feel. The other thing I think that's probably, you know, notable for a lot of people about this is that it was shot on iPhones.
Yeah, although that's not even really notable for Soderbergh anymore.
Right. that's kind of the milieu he's working with. An iPhone 8, by the way, was what he used for that.
That's what I have.
And it's one of those things too that knowing that and watching it, you're like, God, it looks gorgeous, you know.
And it makes me wonder what the hell is wrong with me that I can't take one decent photograph. And he's shooting a movie that looks beautiful.
It does do some of that. And I do think maybe having a small camera.
I'm sure he's got some really intimate shots.
You know what I mean? There's some really intimate, the way the movie's framed, you do sort of feel like you're right up on these people a lot, you know?
Yes. But again, I'm also sure he has the fanciest lenses and whatnot you can buy for your iPhone. Nevertheless, it's a pretty impressive thing that he's doing. And he just, in general, is impressive. Like, everything about the film craft of this, like every Soderbergh project I've ever watched, is excellent.
Yeah.
And while that might not be enough without, like, that in and of itself might not be a whole lot, it's like a nice thing, you know? That sounds very trivial when I put it that way, but it's like it does help the enjoyment of the film, and it's just, I often find myself watching Soderbergh stuff being like, God, it's just so good.
Yeah, I mean, he's a sort of a technical master, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you can sort of see that, and there's a precision about a Soderbergh film, I think, that is definitely evident here. But I thought this was, one of his more moving work. Some of among his more moving work, and I really thought that the acting performances, and he gets a lot of good acting performances, but like Andre Holland and Zazie Beetz are tremendous in this, and really sort of charismatic, and I don't know that the film works without either of those two performances being that way.
Yeah, I would agree, but that's nothing new from either of them, right? Did we watch The Nick?
I mean, they do pretty good work. I think we did talk about The Nick at some point. I didn't stay with it all the way because I don't have Cinemax, so it was, you know, kind of a...
It was only like two seasons.
Yeah, it was hard to get. It was hard to get all The Nicks.
I just love that show, and Andre Holland was brilliant on it. And just in general, I've always enjoyed him. And Zazie Beetz, I wonder if I'm even pronouncing that right at this point.
Yeah, we need to get like an official ruling on that one.
She's spectacular. So I don't mean to sound unenthused about that, but I guess that was not something I found to be particularly surprising.
Yeah, I wouldn't say I was surprised by it. I'm just saying it's what it is.
Yes, you're correct. Full agree.
You know, and this is a kind of movie, you know, it's one of these things, right, that, you know, it's sort of the kind of movie that you hope Netflix can bring back.
Yes.
That sort of just a movie that's just adults talking.
Yeah, I don't know what this costs, but like the $10 to $30 million adults talking film, yes.
Yeah. You know, people say like, oh, classic 70s cinema, you know what I mean? Like that sort of movie. You know, that's what this is. And I, as someone who still enjoys those movies, I'm glad that there's hopefully will be a place where that will continue to exist, because you can't really see those in the theater so much anymore. You know, there's a few. Once when I get a Widow's or
very
something.
Rarely. Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. Very, very rarely.
Or Beale Street. You know what I mean? But there just aren't that many. So, did you think
even Beale Street, which I think we both loved. I mean, I certainly liked it more than this. No offense to this. That's a movie that it's a movie that does get made a little more because it's this like love drama. You know. And I think the like talky movie about something random, which is really all basketball is here. Like there's not a lot of, you don't have to know much about the sport. You know what I mean? It's about the business side and it's all pretty well explained. It's more just a movie about people.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's different. It's not this love epic. It's not based on a book. Like, that you can still get made. This movie is incredibly difficult to get made these days, and I'm really glad it did.
Yeah, me too. Did you notice that the draft prospect was also the basketball stud in American Vandal?
Yes, and was a character on a season of Unreal that we watched.
Really?
Yeah.
So that I don't even remember.
Oh, yeah.
All right. While we're in Netflix world, they did drop a Valentine's Day special episode of Big Mouth.
Yeah, they did.
And man, that show just delivers, right?
Like, I can confirm Big Mouth is the elite of the elite. Like, I, and again, this might sound less complimentary than it's intended to be, but I know exactly what I'm going to get. It's hilariously funny, and like, it just put this heading on anything forever, and I will watch it.
Yeah, I mean,
Big Mouth presents blank. I'm in. Seriously, why not? Nick Kroll. Because I realized watching this, one of the reasons I didn't like the Kroll show very much is I don't love his voices.
Yeah, some of which are in this show are borrowed wholesale from Kroll show, by the way.
Right. And like that, the, for instance, is it Lola, the obnoxious girl?
Yeah, who's kind of like, she's sort of like the publicity girl voice, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
Yeah. And Coach Steve was another one that, you know, yeah, just migrated
both of those
over.
Voices on Kroll show drove me nuts, but this show is so well written and so funny, I don't even think about it.
Yeah, and there's so much going on, and
oh my god, and every, it's joke after joke after joke, and every one of them is hilarious. It is so wild. It's one of the most constant laughing shows. I find myself having to jump back because I laugh through jokes that I want to hear.
Yeah, and all of that only works, I feel like, if it's not balanced perfectly with, yeah, like the sweet, you know what I mean, and like
the sweet,
genuinely
and the,
sincere, emotional underpinning of the show. You know what I mean,
and the respectful.
Yeah.
Like, they managed to be respectful of both genders, of different races, of different gender identities. It's so impressive, man. It's just the genius of the comedy behind this show is wild to me. Yeah. It really is.
Yeah, like the Jay Bilzerian ultimate machine. Like,
oh my god.
It's hilarious and also like sweetly like Trojan horsing a whole thing about bisexuality like right in the middle of all of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh man, so it's great. So good. I just can't. I mean, honestly, I was pretty excited for this, I guess. This wasn't a show that before it came out, you know, ever, not this episode, but before it came out ever, that I was like, oh, I can't wait for Nick Kroll's cartoon about puberty. You know what I mean? But I don't think I ever could, if you telling me the concept, I never could have imagined it being this good on so many levels so consistently.
Yeah.
Never in a million years.
Yeah. Now I'm like mad that there's only one. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, obviously, he's coming in, but I was like, the ones of more of these.
As much as I loved Russian Doll and am loving Russian Doll, and I liked a lot of what we watched. I liked High Flying Bird. I liked some of the other stuff we're going to get to. If there was another Big Mouth available right now, I'd watch it before anything.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Like, if another Big Mouth comes out on the day Game of Thrones comes back, if I don't have time, I'm watching Game of Thrones on Monday. That's how I feel about this show.
Wow. That's a hot take right there.
What's one day for something I've waited this long for when I can like laugh uproariously for as long as Big Mouth is on my screen? It's this Valentine's thing really drove it home, 'cause it was just a 42-minute machine gun fire joke session, and it was brilliant.
Yeah, it is great. I'm still watching Game of Thrones, but it's great.
Yeah, I mean, whatever. Look, Game of Thrones isn't out. This isn't happening for real. I'm probably being hyperbolic. I'm just trying to really drive the point home that, like, this man, you know, the real test is we should have my mom watch it, because I can tell you she's not going to be thrilled with the general tone and tenor of the comedy. You know, like, dick and fart jokes is not necessarily her bread and butter, but I do think it's so good and so clever that she would probably really enjoy it. So maybe we'll run that test the next time some Big Mouth comes out.
Yeah, my mom's 100% on this. Still not her scene.
I mean, it would not be a demerit if my mom didn't like it. I'm just saying that would really be the ultimate, like, wow. Like, if my mom, being generally completely uninterested in this sort of thing, found it funny.
Well, and look, just
I think she might.
Just the fact that it's an adult cartoon and you're watching it, I think speaks volumes.
Sure.
Because I haven't been able to really get you into any of the other adult cartoons that we've
talked
about.
No, and we've tried. We've tried with some of the really well-respected.
Yeah, and no shades to Big Mouth, because I agree with everything you've said, but I actually like BoJack more, and I can't get you into that at all. So
I don't think you're the only one.
Yeah. Okay, so let's jump into the world of reality TV while we're talking about things that my mom isn't going to watch.
Your mom won't watch Top Chef?
My mom actually does watch some Top Chef sometimes.
Okay.
But I was actually going to start with a different reality TV show that wasn't in our rundown, but I know that we talked about, and I'm pretty sure you watched.
Oh, yes, I did.
Yes, the challenge has returned.
Oh, yes, I did. Oh, my God.
Well,
could one episode of the challenge... Dude, we should. Oh God, I can't. We forgot to mention this in the pre-production meeting. It needs its own podcast.
I'm really glad to hear you say that, because I was wondering a little bit. You know, the last sort of three seasons of the challenge, they sort of presented as a kind of a trilogy. You know, about vendettas and revenge and whatever. And then they blew that up a little bit this season to do something a little different. And I didn't I didn't know if you would take to that necessarily. So
they didn't blow it up. It was just over.
Right. It was just over. And they kind of reset it a little bit. There's some, you know, new people are and they added a basic look. This season's concept, right? They're really sort of leaning into the people who've been on the show, and then there's an entire whole new group of people essentially challenging them. And I didn't know necessarily how you would take to all the new guys. I didn't know how I would take to all the new people. But yeah, it's delightful conceptually, and you really can see how they're like from the opening shot. You know, when TJ's like doing wheelies and stuff on the, on the ATVs, and it's like shot in that like widescreen, like super high def, like I'm like, oh man, amazing. They're just going for it this
when
year,
he
and I'm here for
up,
it.
He pulls up to the new crew and just does a donut around them and sprays them all with dirt, and then like comes to a stop and just a fog of like a, you know, dirt that he's kicked up with his ATV, and the music is just like dun dun dun, and you're like, oh yes, okay. So
I'm
first
so
of
excited
all,
that they let TJ be TJ. I don't know how much you know about TJ Lavin, human being.
I mean, I know enough to know, like, I know he was essentially an extreme athlete who got in a horrible accident and doesn't care.
Yeah, basic. That's close enough. Yep.
Yeah. So he first of all is already in mid-season form cackling at people's horrible misfortune.
Yep.
Also a man falls down in the first challenge. And then he runs over the challenge is like run down a hill, do a puzzle, more or less. And at the bottom of the hill, he eats it. And the voice, he does the voiceover, and he's like, sure, I know my hand is hurt, and I'm a little... He has an accent. It sounds nothing like the one I'm doing right now. Sure, I know my hand is hurt, and I need to... It's bleeding a lot, but, I want to win, so here I am. And he goes through this whole dumb puzzle with his hand, which they show you, and looks like he... You know, skinned the hell out of it, basically, right? Is that how you'd describe what it looked like?
Yeah.
Turn like he just skinned it up, you know, scratched it up on the ground. And then he does this thing, gets in, and then in the last scene of the show, they're like, by the way, homie, you broke your arm. See ya.
You gotta go.
Heartbreak.
Doctor said you gotta go.
Oh, my God. I couldn't believe it. And just... The entire concept, because, okay, so first of all, remember the first challenge we actually ever watched for this show was Champs versus Stars.
Correct, yes.
And this newcomer thing has an element of Champs versus Stars to it in that, you know, they're pairing up the oldies with the newbies, right?
Right.
But the difference is... And both are great for different reasons, but I'm excited about this new version that I've not seen. The Champs versus Stars was like, here are these champs who are challenge superstars. They've done this 1,000 times. They come in confident and cocky and talking trash. Here are these stars who think to themselves, I'm a star. Who are these monkeys? I'm going to win this thing because I matter. And they're in for a rude awakening, right?
Yes, yes, indeed.
These guys, these newbies are just like, no offense, except offense, but no offense. They're just reality show trash bags. So they have like this reverence for the challenge superstars.
Yeah, it's great. It's great because they've all watched this show and they
know.
Yeah,
obviously. Like this is a group of people who have been dreaming of this opportunity for years.
Yep.
And so seeing them like try to angle for which old guys and gals they're going to try to cozy up to. And like, you can already see people playing like sex politics games. Like this, there was something to the trilogy where, like, a lot of the people with the experienced game players are, like, letting things develop.
Mm-hmm.
And this episode was just like, we got to play the game hard now. And, man, I am excited.
Yeah. There are a couple of, I think, the things that were really smart. I mean, one of the things that we've learned in the last two seasons is that the Brits in the show bring something to the table.
Yes.
And so I wasn't sure necessarily how I was going to feel about bringing people in from all these other reality shows, but loading up, this allowed them to load up with a bunch of Brits, which is just going to be tremendous television. Like, you can already tell.
Oh my God, Big Ashley? How excited are you for Big Ashley?
Yeah. And like that one guy, I think was from Love Island, who like is just kind of, he's a British trash talker, essentially.
Yes. But like, he was immediately out when it came to like doing anything worthwhile.
Yeah, he's gonna be great. And
oh my goodness,
they also, I think, correspondingly, really for the returning veterans, like really loaded up an all-star team. And I'm excited for you because I don't think you have seen any seasons with Nani yet.
No, yeah, but she's already made a huge stir by leading on a Bachelor and then like grinding in public with Johnny Bananas.
Yeah,
so like, again,
yeah,
I couldn't be more in. Yeah. It's every worst part of me is what loves this, but it loves it all the same.
Yep, it's yeah, like, look, it definitely appeals to your baser instincts, but it does it so well. It's like, oh, it really is. It's everything you want from reality television. And this is the 33rd season of this show.
Wow.
And they continue to find ways to reinvent it and keep it interesting. And I'm here for the season, and I'm so glad you're on board.
Yeah. We'll revisit it at some point, I'm sure.
Indeed. And I do hope that there are more Bachelor people in the future as well. But that's another story for another day. Let's talk about Top Chef real quick, because I feel like we haven't visited in with that show in a while.
Man, I told you after the first episode that your boy Justin was one to be reckoned with, and I'm telling you, he's staying right in that zone of like, he grabs a second place here or third place there. He's won one or two challenges, I want to say. Or
I don't think he's won. I think he's won a quick fire. Has he won any elimination challenges?
I can't remember. He's definitely been top three a couple of times though. And
yes,
I think he's just in that, and he's only been bottom three, I think, the one time. And I just think he's in that zone of like, he's starting to feel himself. He's heating up a little bit as time goes on. And I think he's hitting his stride right at the exact right time.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, he did this week make a Juicy Lucy, which is like the one staple of Minnesota cooking that I think is worthwhile to export to the rest of the world.
Oh, the Juicy Lucy is the bomb. Well, yeah. Of course, it's classic Midwest food genius.
Yeah, and just unveiled like, it at the perfect time too, I think. Right, it's like the perfect challenge to make a Juicy Lucy.
That's what I'm saying, man. And they loved that thing. I think he was second, right?
He was second. Yeah. Well, yeah, he was second to Eric, who, to me, has now, in a show where Eric is now the only person left on the show who's won two challenges. All the other people who won multiple challenges have gone home. Like, everything is evenly distributed pretty much against these contestants in terms of who's left. But to me, if there's anyone who's now a front runner, it's Eric, I think.
Yeah. I'm telling you, Justin's in there, and I kind of like Kelsey too. That's the blonde, right?
Yeah, I think Kelsey's up there. The other thing about Eric that to me is noteworthy is no bottom showings. He hasn't been in the bottom three yet. And I think he may be the only contestant that can say that. Justin. Him and Justin.
No, I think Justin was in there once.
Oh, yeah, you're right. You're right. Week four, Justin was in the bottom. So,
I got to say, Eric also might be the most likable person on the show.
Yeah.
He seems like a really nice guy.
Like when they're doing the quick fire and it's about bullion cubes, and he's like, yeah. I did my thesis on bullion cubes.
Yeah.
Like, what?
Yeah, but it's just tell like, oh, you did? Yeah. You cutie. And he, yeah, there's something about that guy that's just like, I would like to have you cook me dinner and then, like, sit down and chat with me while I eat.
Yeah.
He, I think, is a favorite and also a fan favorite, if you will. But in general, this is a good group, except Sarah, who's just seems like the most miserable impossible person to be around.
We're gonna talk about this. I don't know that Sarah's the most miserable person to be around. Like I do think that everyone seems to like her, and
everyone's nice to everyone for the most part on this season, which is a little weird.
I think that Sarah's really into being from Kentucky. Feels a lot of pressure to represent Kentucky on this show,
she's also just like obnoxious.
Things come into play where it's like, I mean, look, if you're from Kentucky and you get to do something on the floor in front at Rupp Arena in front of a crowd and the crowd turns on you, I could see why that might make me upset. What I don't understand is the whole pre-made waffle mix thing. Like, typically doing something pre-made on this show, that's like often an automatic dismissal, right? So, like, I was really unclear as to why everyone was just like, all right, you pre-made waffle mix, no problem.
I could not believe she didn't go home. I feel like there's a Kentucky bias. I'm not kidding. I feel like they want, because they lost the other person who had Kentucky ties in the first episode. And I just think they want, I have to assume they want that. Because otherwise, I cannot understand how Michelle goes home. Fine, her ribs were a little soggy, but like it's a tough cooking environment for ribs. Maybe it wasn't the best decision.
I think the other thing is that they pre-made, you know, if you're allowing pre-made waffle mix, if that's not a disqualifier.
This chick used pre-made.
They said there that her chicken and her waffle were better than the other chicken and waffle dish that were served there. So I can understand that. To me, it's just typically.
No, they didn't say that about the waffle. They just said the chicken. But
typically, you go home for making pre-made stuff on this show.
Well, come on, man. You're on Top Chef and you bought a mix.
Yeah. And like waffle mix, it's not like waffle mix is difficult, right?
No. So. It's like flour baking. I mean, it's the craziest thing.
Right. And then there was the whole thing, by the way. This is the other thing that bothered me, was like this notion that the other team like ratted her pre-made waffle mix out. Like
it's on TV.
Yeah. Like we saw you in the store. Like Tom did not just bring up the pre-made waffle mix thing to Adrian by accident, right? Like, he's clearly been fed the line. You know what I mean?
But hold on. But even if he hadn't been fed the line, if your argument is, I needed you not to mention this so I could try to sneak one past them, aren't you already a loser?
Yeah. I think her argument was,
what in the F?
Why did you didn't have to turn the crowd against me, which is probably fair, right?
Okay, but I don't see that as them being like, let's get the crowd against Sarah. That's them feeling the energy and rooting their team on the floor, which is exactly what they said when I thought they were way too nice to her as she was being a tiny little baby. I just found the whole thing so distasteful, and I already found her so obnoxious. The episode at Maker's Mark, she literally sat down with her team and was like,
I can do all these dishes.
I can make that.
I love someone finally had to be like, you can do them all, clearly, so just pick one.
Exactly. Like, that's who this chick is.
But that's what I mean.
And the
fact
that
it seems to be she seems to be a lovely person, except when she is called upon to represent Kentucky and then she gets super stressed out, right?
Let me be clear. I don't know this lady. I don't care to know her. I have no idea if she's a nice person or not. Presumably, she's perfectly nice. I'm just saying, as she exists as a reality TV character, screw her. I'm over her.
I also think it's weird that they call her Mama. I just do. Just feels weird.
Yes.
I don't like
which,
it.
Which feels like a thing she specifically asked for, but then also but then tried didn't. To throw back in Adrian's face. And I'm like, bitch, please.
Yeah.
Like that, I often react to her like, enough already.
Yeah. Well, you know, she's been cooking well lately. So there's no guarantee that she won't be around till the very end of this thing.
No, she seems to be a really good chef, actually. And she also seems to make food. I mean, I think I would very much like to eat her food.
Yeah. And also, like, as someone who has lived in some small towns in the South, including in Kentucky, like, she's a Jew from Paducah, Kentucky. Like, that is.
Yeah, respect.
Respect for that. Yeah. But
so I have to say it was ice cold to send Michelle home a week after the heartbreaking Beatles fish.
Yeah. Well,
it just,
you know, winning on this season has
been a curse.
Yeah, it's been a curse. A lot of people have gone out after they've won or ended up in the bottom. Yeah.
Since the first winner was eliminated the very next week.
Yeah. Yep. NeNe won two challenges in a row and then got bounced.
Boom. So. Yeah, it's been a weird season. And there's also been this weird – it seems more so than other seasons I've watched. Like, they had some weird bonding at the very beginning where there's this, like, our house against the world thing that's been going on since the start that I don't totally get, but whatever.
Yeah. No, they all – they love each other, I think, more – maybe more than any season.
Yeah.
Where even though the – you know, I think – you know, we watch an hour every week.
Right. They spend a ton of time together.
Yeah, like they're doing like 18-hour days together. And remember, they take your phone. They take, you know, you don't have TV. You don't have, yeah. Right? So it's like these are the only people you talk to for the course of this competition. So I do think that there is some, you know what I mean? You're just going to latch onto each other because you're the only people sharing this experience, you know?
Totally.
So it's been a delightful season, though, so far. And
really good. Really good
stuff. I'm looking forward to it. Although I do really feel like we've run through most of the Kentucky staples now that we got Calipari in the mix. So
yeah, how did we not see Calipari coming? There have been a couple Kentucky staples.
I wouldn't have guessed that they could have gotten Calipari, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, man, do not beware thee who doth underestimate the power of Padma.
Yep. Indeed. You're right. It's true. There is a bit of a... By the way, Coach Cal, who is often frank, I would say, and knows how to work the media,
yeah,
surprisingly kind of like, these are all really good.
Yeah, yeah. Very, very, very politician-esque about the food presented to him.
Yes. I didn't see that coming. It'd be really great if the next episode had Patino in it.
Oh my God! Except no.
Except
like yes, except, but also definitely except, no.
Do you trust him near Padma? Right?
Oh Jesus! I mean, somebody had to do it, but still, shame.
Oh yeah, so it'd be interesting to see what Kentucky stuff, and then probably they're going to leave right for the as we get close to the finale. So.
Yeah, you'd think so,
and
right?
And go somewhere exotic. So I'm going to guess maybe we got one more Kentucky episode. Or I guess they, you know, they went to Nashville. They could go, you know, to Cincinnati or Indiana or something. I don't know.
Right.
Oh, you know what it is? I figured it out. We haven't done a bluegrass episode yet, right?
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, that's got to be coming.
Okay. There's a lot of weed in Kentucky, right? You think there's a weed episode coming?
I do not think there's a weed episode. If they didn't do that in Colorado... then I don't think it's coming.
Hey man, it's weed's way more mainstream now than last year. The you know they got a bill in the House and the Senate.
The edibles challenge in Colorado would have been really fantastic.
Oh my God! I mean, I know some guys they could get to judge it, and I don't mean me, although I would do it.
all right. Let's see. Do we want to talk about that's kind of the main stuff on our list. Do you want to get to True Detective or should we Let's save that maybe for.
We did not get to Miracle Worker yet.
Oh, we did not get to Miracle Worker yet, which premiered last night on TBS. This is the Steve Buscemi is God show.
Yes, and can I just stop you before we even start and ask you if you did you notice? And in fact, I may need you to pause and check if you did not. Did you notice that the opening theme to Miracle Workers kind of sounds like a parody of the opening theme to Game of Thrones?
I did actually notice that.
You did?
Yes. I had the exact same
bizarre?
Thought. Yeah. Yeah, it was a little bit like, and I was trying to figure out if it was on purpose. I mean, you have to, it's the Game of Thrones show. Like
it had to be on purpose,
yeah,
right?
Like you can't be like, I've never seen Game of Thrones. You know what I mean? Like, so.
No way.
Yeah.
Had to be.
And even like the way, like it does sort of have, I wouldn't say like visually that it copied the Game of Thrones visual theme, but it was, it wasn't not reminiscent of it either, right? With this kind of world and some things sort of expanding and contracting and stuff. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
No, it's true. which is like the very last thing I would have expected to compare it to before watching it, and strangely, maybe even more so after watching it.
Yeah, because
it
has nothing to do with Game of Thrones.
It could not be less Game of Thronesy as a show.
But it kind of reminded me of like when you know, in our business, if you ever get one of those like commercial jingle packages, sometimes where you get a song that is clearly sort of meant to be another song, but they changed it just enough.
It's like, how interesting that in this commercial for Vintage Swords, there's a song that just sounds just enough like the Game of Thrones song to make someone think maybe it's a Game of Thrones sword.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And what a random thing to mention, but yes, I did notice that, in fact.
Okay, so that aside, this was a blast, I thought. I mean, I don't know. It's a limited series. I think there's only maybe 8 of them. I was a little surprised. So this will be a slight spoiler, but if anyone who knows the concept, which is basically Steve Buscemi is God, he decides I've had enough with Earth, I'm going to blow it up. And a couple of angels played by Daniel Radcliffe of Harry Potter fame and a young lady whose name I don't want to blow now, but it's like her last name is Viswanathan.
Yes. Did you see Blockers?
Yes. She's one of the kids in Blockers.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they're angels who have to make a bet with God that if they can grant one of the prayers that had previously been considered impossible, he'll save Earth. And now I was kind of expecting an episodic, they try to grant prayers each week and kind of don't get it till eventually they do, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
But actually, the pilot sets it up where they choose the one prayer they're going to answer. And that caught me a little off guard, but I don't know. I'm intrigued. And I certainly thought all of the performances in the first episode were very endearing, and I'm definitely interested in watching more.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I thought this episode was very pilot-y. You know what I mean? Like, it's doing a lot of work to set up what's going to happen in this show. I didn't think it was particularly funny. There are some laughs, but not a ton of laughs. But I really felt like that was because it was being pilot-y. And so my...
Yes.
I am intrigued by the show, and I think it will be good. You know what I mean? You can really see... Radcliffe and Viswanathan, if I'm saying that right,
yes,
are really charismatic performers, and I think they're going to be quite a pair.
Right. It's almost like all the pieces are there to be really funny, and I believe in them, even though this was not a particularly laughy episode. Like, you can feel where it's going to be funny and how, right?
Yeah. So, and the bones of this show are from Saturday Night Live. Lorne Michaels is a producer, and Simon Rich, who was a writer there,
Really young guy, Simon Rich, because there was a little bonus content.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's the guy? Oh, my goodness.
Well, you know, his dad is Frank Rich, the New York Times columnist.
Not Buddy Rich.
Some renowned
jazz drumming fan.
Not Buddy Rich when he flies off the handle.
No, he's 34, but he looks about 24.
Yeah, he sure does. all right. So, yeah, I have high hopes for this show. Like I said, I did not laugh a ton watching this first episode, but I did enjoy it quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, I would say I was excited coming in, reasonably high expectations. And although this episode didn't exactly meet those expectations, I'm no less excited moving forward.
Yeah, it's interesting. I thought Buscemi was going to be kind of a weary god, you know, because he's Steve Buscemi and you know what I mean? But
no, but he's more of like a fuck it god.
Yeah, yeah, which I didn't expect, but I kind of enjoy. So
yeah. Yeah, totally. And I also, I guess I didn't totally picture the relationship between Daniel Radcliffe and what's-her-face, which now feels very disrespectful just having come out of my mouth. But
it's okay. It's a long name that's hard to say.
It's a long name. We've said it a couple times. I didn't necessarily anticipate the relationship being what it is, but again, I quite enjoyed it.
Yeah. All right, so should we get to homework?
I think we'd better.
Yeah. All right, so the thing that at least a lot of people in my life are talking about is a show on Hulu called I guess the way you pronounce this is Pen 15. It's a play on the word penis, right? The 1-5 is supposed to be
IS.
In that situation. And that's a show, like I said, on Hulu that people are fired up about. So we're going to watch that. I guess we're going to try to catch the Umbrella Academy, which is coming to Netflix this week. And that is based on the comic book work of Gerard Way from My Chemical Romance. So I'm kind of interested in checking that out. And then what else did we have?
Fighting with My Family is the name.
Is
Fighting
it?
With My Family.
That's not ringing any bells.
The Page biopic.
Oh, yeah. Okay. You're right. That is it.
I'm glad it really locked in the first time.
If you just said wrestling movie, I would have been right there. But,
right.
Yeah, we're going to watch a movie about wrestling. I'm going to pay money to go to the theater to watch
Alita
wrestling.
Battle Angel.
Let's watch the wrestling.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. I don't have high hopes for Alita Battle Angel.
No, nor do I, my friend, nor do I.
All right, but we can be proven wrong on all that. And we may also check in on True Detective. We've been sort of talking about doing that now for 3-4 weeks. And I think we may be in different places on True Detective. So I actually am interested in having that conversation at some point down the line.
Yes, I think we will, whether next week or the week after when it's done. Who's to say?
Yeah. Plus, we'll probably watch a crap ton of sports between now and then, so something may come up in that.
Oh, you know it. Well, we have NBA All-Stars, so we can watch and react.
Are you fired up to watch the NBA All-Star game?
Oh, come on. Who do you know who's a bigger NBA hole than me?
Yeah, but I mean, the All-Star, I know last year with the new format, people tried a little bit more.
Oh, you mean it's just a bunch of the greatest athletes in the history of the world playing a goofy game of pickup basketball? Yes, please, all of it.
Yeah, see, but, yeah. Like, now, if you
put... And they might try at the end, bonus.
If you put those same 25 guys, or 24 guys, or whatever it is, with those same teams in Rucker Park, I would be like, that would be amazing to me. But in this league where nobody's going to like, we're, you know, they're all just, anyway, whatever. I don't know.
I don't know, All-Star man. The young guys are wired a little different.
Yeah, we'll see.
I think as the All-Star game gets younger over the next few years, I'm interested to see how that develops. But again, it doesn't matter to me. I'm here for all of it.
Yeah,
I watch the celebrity game.
Are you here for Giannis basically being Eddie from Top Chef when it comes to picking sides?
Yeah, he just picks a bunch of centers.
It's like It's like, I mean, I'm just going to pick the people closest to me right now, I guess, who are standing right here. Because
well, they're just, he's so, he's, it's because he looks right over the heads of everybody else. Like, he looks around and all he sees are guys who are 6'10 and above.
Right, right.
Everyone else, he's like, is anybody down there?
Yeah, right. Hello? Steph picked me last time. I remember to grab him. And then and then it's just all centers from here on out.
Yeah, like, Steph physically short, but the stature, the right. Very tall. It's very like tall in stature.
You know you can only play one of those at a time, right?
Yeah, no, I am excited for the Vucevic, Nowitzki, Jokic, Griffin lineup. I am.
That is those. If you want to, find an NBA hole, find you someone who's going to say, I'm excited for that lineup. That's
no, but seriously, I think it could be pretty good. We'll see. It's going to be goofy for a half at least, probably three quarters, but I think it could get pretty fun.
Yeah. All right. I don't, but we can certainly talk about it either way. And
well, you know, who knows? Maybe someone will surprise you in the dunk contest.
All right. I think with that, we should say goodbye.
Bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling. And the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.